Okay. We'll begin with a little bit of review. We'll actually do a lot of review, and Nathan, I apologize in advance, but we'll try to do new material as well. Chazara is always a good thing. We began last week, we're doing the third parak of Sanhedrin. I mentioned that the third parak of Sanhedrin is very closely linked to the first parak of Sanhedrin in many ways, but and like a proper hakdama would go through many of the larger, what we call metasugyas in the first parak, but we're just going to jump straight into the third parak. And the first sugya is what we call Zebur Loechad or Zavla. So in order to introduce it, let's just take a look at the first Mishnah. Perhaps I'll summarize the Gemara. We'll go through some of the stuff that we discussed last week, and that will lay the groundwork for what we'll be discussing this week and Be'ezus Hashem in future weeks. The Mishnah begins, Dinei Mamonos B'Shalosha. This is the Mishnah on Daf Chakim Amud Aleph and Sanhedrin. A court for monetary matters consists of three judges. We know that the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin spends an entire Amud talking about the different courts that you have. 3, 5, 7, 23, 71, all sorts of different numbers that you have for different circumstances and different cases. But monetary matters have three. Says the Mishnah. We'll get there. Zeb borer lo echad, v'zeb borer lo echad, u'shnehen borerin lohen od echad.
Right.
This guy selects one, and the two of them select another one. Now, as we will discuss, the Gemara actually has three different ideas as to what that means. Just to forecast the conclusion, what it means is Reuven chooses one judge, right. Shimon chooses his judge, and then together they choose a third judge.
That's what people say by shorthand, Zavla.
Zeh borer lo echad, Zavla. Right, that's why our Mar Makomo say Beitin shel Zavla. Rabbi Meir, that's Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's the position of Rabbi Meir, that the two Ba'alei Dinim contribute to choosing a third Dayan.
The Dayanim pick.
Right. So tripartite.
No. The two Ba'alei Dinim, the position of Rabbi Meir is that the two Ba'alei Dinim come together to choose a third. The position of the Chachamim is that the two judges come together to choose a third. Okay? So,
okay.
Good.
That makes more sense.
That's what we do it a lot of times here. And we have a three-panel arbitration. Each side
through the Basin of America or through?
No. I'm talking about secular arbitration, like through the AAA or.
Oh, this is totally.
You have each party picks their own arbitrator, and then the two arbitrators get together and pick a third.
Okay. Well. Okay. Yeah, perfect.
As long as there's no conflict with the one that you pick could have a conflict because you pick him. But the third, the one has to be truly neutral.
Fine. Tov. Okay. We'll talk about the structure here.
In general.
There's going to be a lot to talk about. That's one machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Keep it in mind. Do the two Ba'alei Dinim choose the third Dayan, or do the two Dayanim choose the third Dayan? It seems either one seems like a decent system, right? It's almost, at this stage, it seems almost arbitrary. We'll have to see what exactly Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are actually arguing about. Fortunately for us, the Mishnah has two more issues that are matters of dispute between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Zeb posel dayano shel zeb. Zeb posel dayano shel zeb. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir maintains that each one can just reject the dayon of the other party. I don't like him. I can just reject him. Get rid of him. Okay. V'chachamim omrim emasai. The chachamim say, when can you do that? Bezman shemevi alehin raya shehin kroven opsulin. If you bring proof that they're relatives or that they have some form of other disqualification,
not just because he wears a mustache.
Yeah, not because I don't like the way he looks. If they're ksherim or if they're experts, you can't just get rid of them by dismissing them. Okay.
Right.
Then the Mishnah goes on to quote a third machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, which, as the Gemara highlights on Amud Beis, is a more complicated machlokas. There's actually like a four or five way machlokas amuraim as to what that last machlokas is really about. So we'll leave that aside for now. But so far we have two machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Number one, who's choosing the third dayan? Is it the Ba'alei Dinim or the two dayanim?
How you disqualify?
Can you disqualify? So, whenever we have two machlokos in a Mishnah, what do we want to be asking conceptually? Do they happen to be placed together? Or is there some conceptual common denominator? Okay? Any thoughts just looking at the two machlokos offhand?
Well, you can only...
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that the views are consistent with one another.
Okay, tell me why.
The Chachamim is saying that the two Dayanim pick the third.
Right.
So that there's there's some sort of neutrality about it, and so you can't just knock out one
I mean, isn't there neutrality even for Rabbi Meir? There's neutrality, yeah. No, because the two of them are choosing together.
No, yeah. But Rabbi Meir says you can
disqualify.
I as a litigant can postulate that that dayan just because I feel like it.
Right.
And only once you've chosen two that the other side hasn't.
Without a caveat.
Right.
You could just say, you know, I can.
True, again, but how does that relate to the first machlokas about who's choosing the third dayan? Is there a relationship between the two issues?
Yeah, this according to the second one, the according to the Chacham, I mean the second argument, the two gentlemen have no right to knock out a dayan, and whoever the dayan is has to stay.
Right. In other words, so how does that relate to the first argument? That's my question.
Well, the first argument is once you pick your own dayan, but you have no say on the other dayan.
Or on the third dayan.
Or if the two dayanims pick someone, you have no say against.
Right.
In other words, the two men who are litigating only have a certain amount of power, but not enough.
That's the key.
Right.
So the most obvious common denominator is that Rabbi Meir expands the power of the Baalei Dinim. They are the ones who choose the third dayan. They have veto power over the other person's choice. He's expanding the power of the Baalei Dinim in this case. The Chachamim are mitigating their power.
Right.
They only choose the first dayan. They don't have a say in the other person's dayan.
Unless there's some real disqualification.
Right, exactly, of course.
Right.
But beyond that case, they're constricting the power of the Baalei Dinim. We'll have to ask why that's the case, okay? Fine. Then let me give you a basic summary of the Gemara, and then we'll start going into the basic issues. The Gemara, as I said, the first line in the Mishnah is a bit ambiguous. Zeh borer lo echad, v'zeh borer lo echad, u'shnehen borerin lohen od echad. So the Gemara doesn't exactly know what that means. So the Gemara goes through a whole list of Hava Aminas as to what exactly that line means. And as in the end, there are three possibilities. In the end, it comes to the conclusion that each one appoints one judge, and the two of them point a third judge. But at the beginning, it's not really so clear. At one point, the Gemara thinks what it means is as follows. I appoint the Beis Din. I say, let's go to the Beis Din of America. You say, the Beis Din of America, they're so modern. They're no way. Let's go to Satmar. And I say, Satmar, they're so Haredi, no way. Okay? So we both dismiss each other's Batei Din, and we have to choose together a third Beis Din. That's called Shnayim Shenes Atzmu Bedin. That's going to be the next sugya that we do. It's a very complicated sugya. It appears both here and on the Gemara and Daf Lamed Aleph. So that we'll do next. That's one. But then the Gemara says, no, that can't be what's going on in our Mishnah. It rejects that. And then there's the first Hava Amina of the Gemara is a matter of major dispute among the Rishonim, what exactly the Gemara is saying. And the important view that I want to focus on is Rashi. Look at the first Rashi on the page. Zebor lo echad. Mashma zebor lo beistin echad. This guy appoints one beistin, Sharei Gimel. Vize echad hare shisha. He appoints one, so you have six. Ushnehen borurim lohem od echad hare tisha. The two of them appoint a third beistin. You have nine dayonim who are judging this case. Okay? Behind the kamatama, maiza borer, habitlos asagi. Rashi's gears in the Gemara is, why do you need nine? Habitlos asagi, which means three are sufficient. Okay? So why do you need nine? The way Rashi understands the havamin of the Gemara is that you would need nine judges. This is widely rejected by all the Rishonim for a whole host of reasons, and many of them are good reasons. Many of them are
Shalosha, it doesn't say.
Dine the first, that's what Tosos point out. If you look at the first Tosos, they say, we're not going to read it inside, we read it last week, but the first Tosos says, Dine Momenos Beshlosha, and then you're telling me nine? That's very strange. Rishonim ask all sorts of other linguistic kashas on Rashi, based on the transitions in the Gemara, all sorts of other questions, including yours, Morty. But let me just highlight the question of the rush, the Tosos Rush.
There's no difference between the word shalosh and shlosha, like in arba and arba'ah by Amos and kav. You know, arba'ah is kavin, and arba is it. We see it in, if you look at it through, it's always arba.
Where?
In Gemara.
Yeah.
Arba Amos. Kavba arba amos.
That's a grammatical. That's a grammatical issue.
So is there an issue that it maybe shlosha can be something?
Can be
bigger?
Nine?
Could be bigger. It meaning a set.
No. Well, no matter what your grammatical formulation is, shlosha means three, right?
Right, but it's three.
We'll have to talk about why
He means that it's a group of
three. A group of three.
Each one's choosing a group of three, but that's not right. The implication of Dine Mamonos Peshlosha.
Right.
Okay. Look at what the Tosa Rush says. And the Tosa Rush is a little bit vague, but I'd like to think that this is what he's asking. Zevor, source 7, page 3. Zevor lo echad, Pirish Rashi, based in Echad Shehim Gimel, Ushnehem Borim Lahem Od based in Echad, Hare Tisha. Basically, you end up with 9, each summarizes Shitas Rashi. That's why the Gemara asks, why do we need 9? We only really need 3. V'kasha. That's all he says. He doesn't say like Tosos. Tosos give you the linguistic point. Dine Mamonos Peshlosha. Once it says that, how can you have said that it's referring to 9? That could be what the Tosos Rush is asking as well. But it's possible the Tosos Rush is just asking the following question. Why would you ever think that you need 9 judges? We don't find such a base thing. Why, ignore the linguistic point that the Mishnah says Dine Mamonos Peshlosha. Even if our Mishnah didn't say that, we know from general knowledge, or from the first Mishnah, in the first paragraph of Masechet Sanhedrin, we know that you only need 3. Why would we ever have a Havamina that you need more? So that's a question that I'm going to leave with for a moment. Hopefully we'll have an answer for that, certainly by the end of this year. Why would we actually have a Havamina that Zebor Lo Echad, or based in Shalzavla, requires 9, according to Rashi? But before we focus on that, in order to highlight the issue, let's look at, this is, again, and I apologize, this is something that we did last week, but the concept of Yetzei HaDin La'amito. If you go to, let's look at the first wide line in the Gemara.
First set of wide lines.
Yeah, the middle line, there are narrow lines, wide lines, and medium lines. The first medium line in the Gemara. Okay, if you look 5 words from the end of the line, Maishna. Maishna de Avdihachi. What is the reason why they go through this whole procedure of this person choosing one, another person choosing one, and...
Nobody should think they're cheated, you know.
Slow down.
You have an advocate for you on the panel.
Those are two different things. You guys just said two different things.
No, they just...
Slow down. What you guys just said is the subject of Machlokas Rishonim, as we're going to see.
It has to be impartial.
We will see, those two formulations are exactly two formulations that appear in the Rishonim.
Okay.
Just hold on 1 second. And they're very important. Ma'ishna de Avdi Hachi, what is the reason why they did this? Amri b'ma'arava m'shmed Reb Zeira. They used to say in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Reb Zeira, Ma'arava, right? They're in Bavel. Mm-hmm. The West refers to Eretz Yisrael. Mitoksha Zebor lo Dayan Echad, Zebor lo Dayan Echad, Ushnehen Borin Lahan Od Echad. Because this guy chooses his judge, this guy chooses his judge, and the two of them collaborate on the selection of the third. Yetze Hadin La'amita. The case will emerge as true. Yetze Hadin La'amita. The key question for us is going to be, what does Yetze Hadin La'amita mean? And thank Baruch Hashem, Toso, step in for us. This is the, it's right here. And I put it as number 1 on the Maariv Makomos. If you prefer, it's either number 1 or it's the Tosas right here. The bottom Tosas on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. Kadesh Yetzai Din La'amito. Pirish HaRivan says the Rivan. Who was the Rivan? He was one of the earlier Balei HaTosas. I don't know much of the biographical information, but I think he was, may have even been pre-Rabbeinu Tam. I'm not sure though. She'afilu HaChayev Yipara V'Ratzon V'Yomar Kushta Daini. This is what you were saying, Morty. What's happened? Everybody's going to abide by the decision. Even the person who loses the case is going to abide by the basin's decision. And he's going to admit that, look, okay, it was true. Sha'aniba atzmi v'irarti ha'echad.
Right.
I myself chose the Dayan. And if he was able...
Half of the other one.
And if he was able to work for me, he would have worked on my behalf. Now, again, all of this... All of this is what's going on in his head.
Right.
He is saying...
But he's saying that because he believes that his choice is an advocate for him.
Sorry?
Because he believes, the litigant believes that his choice is an advocate for him.
The litigant believes, he believes that, right?
Right.
He's going to abide by their decision because he believes that.
That's right.
But we're never saying that the Dayanim themselves should actually act on their behalf. Take a look at what Tosas continue to say, okay?
Okay.
He says, if you could work on my behalf, he would. Arthur, wow. Great honor and pleasure to have you.
I'm seriously. Sorry, I'm not getting the difference.
Don't worry. Okay. Look at what they go on to say. L'fum rihata mashma. If I were just saying my gut reaction to what this Gemara were saying, I would have said as follows. Shemitok shabirer zeshalo, the zeshalo. Sorry, with the Bach changes it too. We went through this last week also. Ushnehem hashlishi yetzei hadin la'amito below avos. Now, what I would have said is that the judge, not that they will abide by the decision, But the decision will emerge as true. Why? Sheyehei ha'inyan shakol. Because the case will be evenly distributed. We're in source one.
Right.
You give him the right sheet? You can give him the right sheet.
There it is.
V'lo yarbu mahapchen l'chova al mahapchen l'schos v'lo mahapach. That there's going to be evenly balanced because one is going to be working for Reuven, the other is going to be working for Shimon, and it will be even. Tosfos are saying something very important. What is the function of this whole procedure? Is it to make them think that, oh, you know what, we're going to abide by the decision because, in my mind, clearly somebody was working on my behalf. But the Dayanim themselves are entirely impartial, or are we saying that each one has effectively a representative? Reuven chooses his Dayan. His Dayan represents him.
It has to be.
So there are two Deos and Tosfos. The Rivan is saying, look, this is what they think, okay?
Right.
But that would, if you think the way Ben's thinking, then the whole procedure is
tainted.
It tainted because...
It's not tainted.
It's tainted because a Dayan should never be on your side. He has to hear the evidence and as presented...
You hear the distinction? It's like
As it's presented and make a determination, al pi halacha, and the evidence...
He is, but...
It's a strong argument,
the
right?
The point is that a lot of times there are gray areas, right? So you pick a Dayan that will find a way to advocate...
No, but that's what
Hold on, so that if he could find...
lawyers for.
If he could find... Well, we're not talking about...
I know, but the point is...
That's a whole different issue.
I understand, but a Dayan by definition is impartial and should not be tainted by either way.
It's not a taint. It's not a taint. He doesn't have... Hold on. It's not a taint. He doesn't have a stake in the outcome.
No, but he has it. If he says, I'm working for him... Then it's tainted.
So he's sort of an advocate. That's why the two pick a neutral.
Let's see Rashi and the Rush.
I see this work all the time. I mean,
this debate is going to be critical. This goes to the very core of what Beis Hillel Zavala is all about. Let's see Rashi and the Rush, and then we'll elaborate further. Look at Rashi in source 2. Hebrew Maskil Yetze. Zebor lo echad. Each one chooses their own. We're going to be referring to Zavla. Zebor lo echad. Each one chooses one. Yetze din emes la amito. Ditzaisi ba'alei dinin. What does that line mean? Source 2. Again, it's a Rashi here, but. Ditzaisi ba'alei dinin. What does that mean? That the ba'alei dinin will listen. They will abide by the Beis Din's decision.
Right.
This is not a procedure intended to make sure that Beis Din achieved the right result. We're confident that Beis Din will achieve the right result. What is the purpose of having this procedure where he chooses his, he chooses one, and they collaboratively choose the third? The point is so that they should abide by the Beis Din's decision. Disavar hachayav, hare aniba atzmi birarti ha'echad, v'mhaya yachol lahape b'skuzi haya mahave. Key word there, sovar. He thinks, okay,
that by him picking, he can have
his side represented.
Exactly. Now, if I would have just read until there, I would have said that what is Rashi saying? Like the Rivan, that each one, they will abide by the decision because they think
Summer doesn't mean that they think and it's not reality.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it's not reality, but the fact that Rashi's focusing on
fact
that they will abide by the decision rather than focusing on the fact that, oh, we'll have a true outcome because of the balance in the court would seem to imply that Savar is specifically Savar. The ambiguity is thrown in by the end of Rashi. And tell me how you guys, as I mentioned last week, I'm not myself sure how to read this. V'hadayonin ba'atzman, the Dayanim themselves, noche daiton lahapich b'schus shnehem, mipnei sheshnehem berurim. The judges themselves, they make it their intent to work for both of them because both of them chose them. Now here's the ambiguity. Shnehem.
Which Shnehem?
Shnehem in Hebrew can mean each of them or both of them, right? And
well,
here there's a...
Which both is it?
That's exactly the question.
No.
Individual and the paired one, or the individual and the individual?
Meaning one and three, that's your two?
No. The Mishnah Shnehem, we're talking about the two litigants.
Was the litigants.
No, the...
Yeah, for the litigants. They're trying to work for both of the litigants. The question is, what does Rashi mean by that?
Who's they?
The two judges.
Which two judges?
I appointed a judge, you appointed a judge.
What about the third judge?
The third judge is certainly impartial. No question about that. We chose him together.
But maybe they're referring to the judge... let's say the third judge is number three. So
right.
number one, number two, and then number three is the duo.
Right,
duo.
Right.
But so maybe they're talking about one and three acting together, not one and two acting together.
No. He's definitely referring to... No, it's so clear that Rashi's referring to one and two. That's right. Clear. The ambiguity is as follows. Does he mean that one and two are working for both? In other words, they're collaboratively working for both collaboratively. In other words, there's no real bias. Or does he mean that each is working for his chosen one? Do you follow? In other words, is he saying, when Rashi says Shnehem, he's referring to those two judges, and he says, those two judges work for both of the Ba'al Edinim. Does he mean that each one works for his respective litigant? Or that they both work for both of them?
The former.
The former?
That's what I believe.
Yeah, ideally they would both work for both of them, but no. in reality it's not going to happen.
That's right.
So, but then we run into Morty's problem, which is how can you have a Beis Din where...
So Rashi, the way Rashi explains it on the first Rashi...
Let's take a look at the Rush, because Ben is going to like the Rush.
Is saying that I'm picking a Beis Din. Yeah. I'm not picking a person.
Yeah, so what
is that? I don't know if all three Dayanim. I'm picking them. I want to go for this.
Okay, but in the conclusion, we're talking about choosing one. Look at the Rush.
This is Rashi who's saying it.
Look at the Rush. Look at the Rush. Look at the Rush.
No.
Rashi in the conclusion agrees that each one is pointing one. That was only the Hava Amina.
Source 3.
We noted that the Rush here is going to use a very strong language. Okay? That means that he doesn't just think this position is wrong. He thinks it's offensive. And as we will see, it was something that was prevalent in his own time. And it was a practice that he highly objected to. Let's see what he's describing.
What's the practice?
We will find out in a moment. Because there are stupid people who lack wisdom and sophistication, who make a mistake in interpreting Rashi, v'lomden mimenu, and what do they learn from Rashi? She'adayan yeshlo lahapech b'schus oso shabirer, that the judge should try to argue for his respective Baal Din, v'omeid bimkomo, and stand effectively in his place, lachbos b'dvarim asher lo kedin. He tried to distort the matter, you know, as without, not in accordance with the halacha. V'nahagu kama anashim liver lehem ba'al tachbulos, v'nitlam b'zevei Rashi, and they hire these effectively. He's describing these sleazy lawyers who are trying to distort justice, and they're saying that's really what Rashi meant. Shemash v'sheish l'hapi p'schuso. The Rashi says, v'chalila v'chas. Whenever you say a Rishon saying chalila, whenever you see a Rishon saying chalila v'chas, how do you translate chalila v'chas? Chas v'shalom, right? That means that they don't just think it's wrong; they think it's really offensive. Yeah, I give another. It's offensive to have these to say that Rashi meant that you should hire some sleazy lawyer who's going to distort justice in your behalf.
Sleazy Dayan.
Dayan, who's effectively acting as
to do everything to advocate for.
Well, there are no real lawyers in
Halacha. Right, that's what I was saying.
So to have a judge who's acting as this sleazy lawyer is not something that the Rush is happy with. They didn't pay attention to Rashi. What does Rashi say? Savri, they think that they're going to be working for them. Ki hu sover kach. He thinks. He thinks that he's going to advocate on his behalf, and therefore he's going to abide by the decision. Just give me 1 second. Let me just finish the source. But should the Dayan advocate on his behalf unless he thinks it's absolutely true according to Emes La'amito, the Amitas HaHalacha? Obviously not. If he could trick his friend to accept what he's saying, even if he thinks it might be correct, you don't distort and convince your friend that it is definitively correct, unless you are sure. You could present an idea, hey guys, what do you think about this idea? I'm not sure about it. But to take an idea that you're not sure whether or not it's 100% correct and present it as if it's din emes la'amito, that's distorting justice. Now here's the key part. Because we have to see what the Rush himself actually describes for Yetzei Din La'amito.
And
we will see that at first glance it's remarkably similar to the position that he just adamantly rejected. Aval, underline, Mitoksha Zeb Biriro, because he appointed him, Mavin Dvarav Le'ishuro, he understands his position. He understands where he's coming from. V'im Yesh Lo Shum Zad Zchus, and if he has anything working to his advantage, Nosein V'nosein Im Chavero. He, effectively, what is he going to do? Reuven appointed me, so I am going to thoroughly investigate anything Reuven has working in his favor. Am I going to try to distort justice? No way. But I'm going to just try to understand his case as best I possibly can. and the other guy is going to do that for Shimon. Nimtzo lo nishar zchus nistar v'ne'alam l'shneihem. The point is, through this system, no advantage, no element of anyone's case is going to be left hidden. Everything is going to be uncovered. I am going to thoroughly investigate Reuven's case. You are thoroughly going to investigate Shimon's case. We will come up with all of the possible arguments that can be made in favor of either one.
Wait. I wasn't here, so I have to ask.
Yeah.
The five-point judge.
Yeah.
That judge becomes my advocate?
That's exactly what we're discussing. That's exactly what we're discussing.
But not an advocate in the sense that you might think.
Right. Not like a lawyer. In other words, when you hire a lawyer, the lawyer's job is not, let me see what the law really has to say about that. In other words, when you come to a defense attorney and you say, I killed someone, their job is still to make sure that you're pronounced not guilty. Right?
Okay.
So these dayanim, what the Rush is saying, they're not chas v'shalom going to distort justice, right?
Their job
is not to defend you no matter what.
They're trying to give you any benefit, not to take down the other guy.
Yeah, but so if that's the case, what you just said is counterintuitive.
What's counterintuitive?
If I appoint you,
yeah,
I'm assuming you're going to examine his case as closely as
you can. No, it's just the flip side. He's examining the negative aspects of the other guy's case and the positive aspects.
He didn't say that.
So shum schus.
He didn't say that. He didn't say anything about the negative.
He just said
it's implied, right? It's a zero sum game, right? If Ben is claiming that you owe him $100 and you're claiming that you don't owe him $100, and I'm examining all the arguments you have in your favor, what's implied is that
So if I am the judge and I am thoroughly examining both cases.
No, I'm again, let's say both, you appointed me
both sides.
Both sides, then I'm not biased either way.
The point is, you're appointing
me. There's a panel of three.
Why are we insulting the judges?
We're not insulting
the judges. There's no insult. There's no insult whatsoever. You appointed me, Arthur. Okay? So I'm going to sit down with you and say, all right, I'm going to court tomorrow and I'm going to discuss
this. Aren't you
going to
sit down with Morty?
Morty's going to sit down with his judge.
Why aren't you going to sit down with Morty?
Effectively, what the Rush is saying is that the way we do this is that we are delegating roles. We make me the investigator who investigates your case. We make Dayan number two the investigator who investigates Morty's case.
You should be investigating Morty's case.
No.
I'm not following. Why?
Because I picked you. You should find out what's wrong with his case.
No, again, I'm examining what's strong about your case as opposed to what's weak about his case. I mean, theoretically, again, it's a zero-sum game. I think it's implicit within assessing what's strong about your case.
I just find this whole... There's a bad taste in your mouth when you say the Dion. Right,
but you have the Dion neutral. But the neutral judge.
No, they should all three.
Hold
be
on a second. The neutral keeps them honest. That's what happens.
But that's not the point.
So you're adopted. So you're
not compromised. Because they have no stake in the outcome.
Exactly.
If they're not investigating both cases equally.
They are.
What's the point? The point is as follows.
He does have a stake. I'm picking him.
1 second.
He's my rabbi.
Give me 1 second. Morty, give me 1 second.
He knows that I'm going
to... Morty, give me 1 second.
On his
we have
contract.
A, we have... We,
then yeah, he's thanks. Okay.
We have, we have a spectrum of positions here. On the one hand, you have the view that the Rush is rejecting out of hand, that they're trying to distort the justice. The other hand, which you guys are adopting, and I think is intuitive, has high intuitive appeal, is the position of the Rivan. Why do we do this? We do this so that they will think that, this guy's advocating on my behalf.
Even though
he's... And then, therefore, they will abide by the Pasty's decision.
The judges themselves should
be totally impartial and neutral.
But
okay?
I, by picking Rabbi Schreier, think that he's on my side, even though.
Right. If we're insulting anyone, we're insulting the Baal Edinim, if anyone, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, Baal Edinim, the litigants.
The litigants.
We're
right?
The judges. The
why are we insulting the litigants?
Because we're saying it's Savar. He thinks that Rabbi Schreier is on your side. You think he's on your side.
But I'm totally impartial. The judges are totally impartial.
Just because you picked him, you think he's on his side.
Right.
But, so that keeps you honest, keeps you to say, if he voted against me, and they all voted against me, I'm wrong.
Right. The third position is that of the Rush. The Rush's position is like what I like to call the investigation position. In other words, in the American Court of Law, anyone who's watched the beginning of Law and Order knows, right? There are two separate and equally important units. It's been a while since the exact dun-dun. Right. But anyway, there are the investigators, and then there are the prosecutors and the judges. What the Rush is saying is that we have a mixture of roles here. What Beis Din does is it says, you, investigate that case. You, investigate that case. After your investigation is complete, we're all going to join together once again, and we are going to discuss whose case is stronger. So in that sense, the judges are impartial when they are expected to render a final decision. But in terms of the investigation, the Beis Din is effectively setting up detectives. Detective number one, you investigate the guy who appointed you. Detective number two, you investigate the guy who appointed you. Then, after you guys have thoroughly investigated, let's come back together and we'll render a final decision.
I got a major problem with that.
That's the position of the Rush.
But I have a major problem
with okay, that. Okay, but so the other people don't hold like that.
Let me ask you a question. When you have if you have a case of 71, do the Dayanim go out and...
No. That's a matter of nefashos. We're not talking about... This is specifically a Beis Din Shel Zavla. If you want to go to the Beis Din Agadol Shel Yerushalayim, the 71 who sit in the Lishkas Agazis, we'll talk about what in what circumstances one can defer.
It's not necessarily an investigation. That sort of paradigm is not necessarily... It could be that everybody agrees almost what the facts are. The question is, what's the rule of law? So somebody...
Right, yeah, okay.
So one time...
So in the investigation here is not only the facts, not only the forensics and the DNA, it's also the legal arguments.
Right.
That's fine.
Right, okay.
But here's the issue, and I think Arthur's deep-seated discomfort with this idea is actually very critical to what Zavla is. What is this machlokes between Rashi and the Rush and Tosfos? What's going on here? So as I said before, I think this goes to the very core of the conceptual nature of Beis Din Shel Zavla. The critical question for us, and we'll see that this has ramifications throughout the sugya, is what is Zevor Lo Echad? Is this a method of choosing a Beis Din? Once you've chosen the Beis Din, it functions as a fully operative Beis Din like any other, like the Beis Din of America, or the Satmar Beis Din, or the Lakewood Beis Din, whatever Beis Din you're talking about. Or is this effectively a fancy version of arbitration? What do we call arbitration in Halacha? Pshara.
Pshara.
Pshara is often translated as compromise.
Right.
But pshara is not necessarily a compromise. You know, when you do pshara, the Batei Din can side in favor of one of the two parties. I gave the example last week. There's a famous case of Rav Chaim. So there was a wealthy woman who had a maidservant who worked to clean her house. And the maidservant had a really one fancy piece of jewelry that belonged to her. And for whatever reason, the Baal Basta borrowed this piece of jewelry from her employee. And she lost it. And they came to Rav Chaim for a Psak Din. Does she have to pay for it? So Rav Chaim asked them, do you want to do a Pshara? And they both said, yes. Rav Chaim said, okay, so pay her for the piece of jewelry that you lost. So why do you ask her if they want to do a Pshara? So there's a halacha called Be'alav Imo. It's a pasuk in Mishpatim that says, if I lend you an ox, and I'm also your hired employee at the same time, if anything happens to the ox or the object that I lend you, you are not held responsible. Why? Because I am present, I am with the object the entire time, so I assume responsibility for the object. So if I lend you my car, and I'm with you, and I come with you in the car, and I'm your hired employee, you're not responsible for the object that I lent you. So, al pi halacha, this woman worked for the Baal Basta, she lent her an object, should this woman have had to pay for it? Al pi halacha, she should not have had to pay for it. Rav Chaim recognized that you have this poor woman
right.
who lent this wealthy woman a piece of jewelry, it was all she had, and she lost it. It doesn't seem very fair that she shouldn't have to pay for it. So Rav Chaim said, do you want to do Pshara? They said, yes. Okay, so pay her for what you lost. You lost the object, okay? So Pshara doesn't mean compromise necessarily. It doesn't mean, oh, you'll pay for half of it instead of the whole thing. It means, instead of looking into my Choshen Mishpat, I'm going to determine what I deem to be the broader spirit of the halacha, what broader, the broader sense of fairness and justice, etc., okay?
Right.
Big question for us is Zebor a fancy form of Pshara? I'm choosing one, you're choosing one, we choose a third one. This is arbitration. It's not a Beis Din. If it were a Beis Din, how can you possibly have biased judges? You can't. A Beis Din, the Dayanim need to be fully impartial.
Well, that's only
The Rush may not even work for it. What?
It only happens according to the Rush. Everybody else would say they're impartial. It's just
that... Only the Rivan. The Rivan, right? The Rivan said that. The second Dayan and Tosfos seemed to actually say that they're working for the Baal Edinim. And then the Rush had this middle view that they're exploring their possibilities, right? According to the Rivan, what we have here is a method of choosing a Beis Din. These guys are stuck. They can't agree on anything. They can't choose a Beis Din. So we give them a procedure through which they can choose a Beis Din. Once they've chosen, this is a Beis Din. And all of the halachos of Beis Din are going to apply, including total impartiality. You can't have a biased Beis Din, lo matzinu, that you could have a Beis Din with biased judges. According to the second day in Tosfos, This is not. Yetzei Hadin La'amito is not just a procedure for choosing a Beis Din. It is an entirely different construct. Zavla is not just, oh, let's give you an efficient procedure for choosing and agreeing upon a Beis Din. You are not having a Beis Din at all. What is this? It's a form of arbitration.
So when do you have a three-person Beis Din as opposed to one, as opposed to...
So generally, by Dine Momentus, you have three. Each plach u plach, ve'ir ve'ir, that's part of the first paragraph of Sanhedrin, which I said, okay. It's not the Hakdama. There's a mitzvah of minu dayanim. You have to appoint judges
it's really not
provinces.
There's never a case, according to the second and the Rosh, of a three-man Beis Din.
There's a three-man Beis Din, let's say, if we were, again, living in the times when there was like real minu dayanim, and in Eretz Yisrael, because there are differences between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Let's say we would go to the Lawrence Beis Din. The Lawrence Beis Din is a panel of three dayanim. If we agreed to go, this only comes up. Well, when it comes up is also part of the question. Hopefully we'll get to that as well. But theoretically, this only comes up if we can't agree to go to a Beis Din. If we agree, let's go to the Beis Din of City X or City Y, then we don't need to get started with this whole procedure. Okay?
So your story with Rav Chaim, that's not a Beis Din. That's clearly not a Beis Din because it wasn't three.
Well, they came to him for pshara.
Right. Well, he asked them, right?
You're supposed to ask them immediately if there was pshara. And I assume Rav Chaim, I mean, like, look, there was the Dayan and Brisk, or Simcha Zissel. So there was like a, when I say Rav Chaim, I mean Rav Chaim Beis Din.
So when the Mishnah is starting out, Dini Mamros B'Shlosha, according to the Rush and the other guy,
Rivan. No. Or the second day in Tosos, yeah.
This is a pshara. Then what's going down here later on? It says, how can you disqualify them? Mipi Bezdin. The Mumchim in the Mishnah.
Slow down. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get back to the Machlokas.
So according to them, if it's a pshar up in the thing, it's not talking about Bezdin.
Never says it's talking about
Bezdin. Yeah, it's talking about a Bezdin Shel Zavla. Again, this is more than just standard pshar. I'm using pshara as a paradigm. This is clearly some form of Beis Din. It's called a Beis Din, right? But is it like a Beis Din in the same form? In other words, is this an upgraded pshara, or is this just a method for choosing a Beis Din?
According to the Russians, maybe it's not. It's not a method. It's using, it's using the techniques of Beis Din, the halachos of Beis Din, as opposed to pshara, which is you said it's outside the. Preview.
Good. Very good. That's a great point to highlight, right? Even if we call this an upgraded pshara, even if it's an arbitration, they're still working with choshen mishpat rather than just what they, general. That's definitely the case. But again, in terms of the form and the structure of the Beis Din, is this a formal halachic Beis Din, or is it a form of arbitration? That's going to be a very critical question in the sugya. What's the difference? Yeah, we'll talk about a whole host of differences. What's the nafkamina you're asking me?
Yeah.
We'll talk about a whole host of differences.
If they're going to follow Choshen Mishpat,
what's the difference? Yeah, so the first difference that we're highlighting is whether or not they can actually be working in favor of respective Baalei Dinim. Do they have to be totally impartial, like the Rivan is saying?
But we're saying that the judges will be impartial.
That's only according to the Rivan. According to the second position in Tosfos, they're not totally impartial. How can you have total? How can you have
impartiality?
The strict view of impartiality. They know nothing about the case until it's presented to them without...
They're not working in favor of any party over another.
Any particular party. As opposed to... Basically, they're glorified or lawyers, according to...
But, with the Russia's qualifications, right.
Our thing is, who make decisions?
Yeah. So you can go... So cut the two and go straight to the...
Third.
To the third, and that's all. We'll get to all of these issues.
But for now, what I'm saying is we have a critical machlokes or critical conceptual issue within Beit Din Shel Zavla, whether this is a form of arbitration or a formal Beis Din. Now let's go back to the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim for a moment. We saw the Rabbi Meir in two instances expands the koach of the Baalei Dinim. Whereas the Chachamim constrict it. Knowing what we now know about the conceptual, the basic conceptual question regarding the nature of Zavla, how can we possibly revisit the machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham?
Well, maybe
Rameir is picking it for himself.
Rameir believes it's more like an arbitration.
And
the Chacham is more on the side of this is a bezdin.
Okay. So, anyone? Okay. Yeah. Go.
Right. And so, for instance, Rameir's
would hold
Rameir's holdings more consistent with what the Rush explains.
Yeah.
Right.
You agree?
I think so.
Anyone think otherwise? So I think that's one approach. I think it's also quite conceivable to say the opposite, which is good, because if we have different Rishonim, right, we always paskin, almost always paskin like the Chachamim over Rabbi Meir,
right,
except in select exceptions. The Halacha, we never paskin like Rabbi Meir. Poor Rabbi Meir. I mean, Rabbi Meir wrote any Stam Mishnah, right, any Stam Mishnah, any Mishnah without attribution is Rabbi Meir.
Right.
So we paskin like Rabbi Meir plenty. But whenever Rabbi Meir has a machlokas with anyone else, we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. So it's good for us to be able... We wouldn't want to lock ourselves into saying that the Chachamim hold one position. That would create a very serious problem for the Rishonim who disagree, right? I think I originally thought, when I read the Mishnah, exactly what Ben is saying. What is the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? Rabbi Meir is intent on consistently expanding the powers of the Baalei Dinim. Why would you say that? If it's arbitration, that makes perfect sense.
Right.
Whenever there's arbitration, what does the authority of arbitration stem from? Always. From the consensus of the litigants. Exactly. That's what arbitration always stems from. You can't have arbitration unless you have consensus of the litigants. So it makes sense that if this is arbitration, you're going to expand the powers of the Baalei Dinim. So, each Baal Din, who's going to choose the third Dayan? Now the Dayanim, I better have a say in the guy who's arbitrating my case. They are going to choose the third Dayan. Okay? And when it comes to the other guys, Dayan, you want to choose a judge? No, again, this is arbitration. I have to have full authority over who is judging my case. So if you are expanding the powers of the Baalei Dinim, of the litigants, what are you more likely to say that this is arbitration? If you take the position of the Chachamim, no. We're giving you a procedure for choosing your Beis Din so that you can both agree. But what is this? This is a court. This is a court of law. Right. It's not in your hands to choose which Dayan you want. We have formal rules for deciding which Dayan is pasul. If you prove that there's some disqualification or that he's a relative of the other person, then you can get rid of him. You can't just get rid of this is a court of law. You can't, this is a court of halacha. You can't just get rid of another Baal Din or another Dayan simply because you don't want to. That was the way I originally learned the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. But I think you can say the opposite as well. Particularly, if you highlight the second day in Tosfos / the position that the Chisrei Hada'as attribute to Rashi. Now, I'll just note for a moment, quickly, before I explain the other side, that even though the Rush says it's total Chisrei Hada'as who make this stupid mistake, there might be grounds for it. And that's in Source 4, the Arama. Look at the underline in Source 4. The Rabbi Meir Halevi. He's one of the great Chachmei Sfarad. Not Chachmei Sfarad HaNotri, Chachmei Sfarad Muslim Spain. So not the school of the Ramban, not the Catalonian school of the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, but the school of the Rimigash and where the Rambam came from, that Spain, okay? And as I think we've spoken about in the past, those are totally distinct intellectual cultures, so it's important to know which one we're talking about, even though generically we refer to both as Sfarad. My Taima, why do they do this? K'dei sheyehem zeh mehapech b'schuso shel baldin zeh shebiriro. So that this guy should work on behalf of Reuven who appointed him. And the other guy works on behalf of Shimon who appointed him. And the third one is not going to have any leanings towards either direction. Now here's the key line in the Arama, and here's the big word, and I'll leave it to you to determine what exactly the Arama means. I think he might mean something, others disagree. He is going to determine what is true. And the din is completed through the two of them. And the din is going to emerge as true. What's the key line in those last words? Why?
Because he picks one of the two.
Right.
One of the two other Dayanan opinion. So there's the two.
Exactly. In other words, let me put it this way. According to the Rush, is every case going to be a two-on-one? Or can you ever have a unanimous decision?
You could, but it,
according to the Rush, of course you can have a unanimous decision. Yeah. One is examining his chus, and the other is one is examining the case for Reuven, the other is examining the case for Shimon. They may come back together, and he may say, look, I tried really hard, but Reuven's got nothing going for him.
Right.
Okay?
You know what the amazing thing about this whole thing is? At the fundamental foundation of this, it's flawed.
Okay. I know.
All you don't like the judges should be picked by both.
That's what I was talking about.
It's a case where they can't agree. It's a case where they can't agree. That's why we're talking about. That's why we're talking about this. Okay. So again, so it would be great if they could just agree on three judges. That would be fantastic.
Or be picked for them.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. But they can't agree. So according to the Rush, is it conceivable that you have a total unanimous decision? Of course it's conceivable that you have a unanimous decision. Again, I examined Reuven's case. He's got nothing going for him.
Right.
Or I think he has X, Y, and Z going for him. But in the end of the day, I realize that really Shimon has the better case. Okay, the stronger case. The Ramah says, Nigmar Adin B'Shneihem, which implies that what?
It's 2-on-1.
It's always going to be a 2-on-1.
That's holding like...
My Dayan is always going to go for me. Your Dayan is always going to go for you.
It's always going to be 2-on-1.
That's the big question in the Adonai.
It's always holding like the third.
What he's saying is that, you know, majority rules...
That's the big question.
It doesn't mean that it's always going to be
that. That is exactly the key question in the Adonai. Does he really mean that it's always going to be the 2-on-1? Or that sometimes, or usually it will happen that way?
It can easily be read consistent with the Rush.
Well, it's quite possible. But I raise it as an important... source. I think it's an open question in the Ramah. I'm not disputing your reading. It's quite conceivable that that's exactly what he's saying. But I think it's notable that he says Vadin Nigmar B'Shneihem. Okay? Now, if we take the view that your judge is your representative, Reuven's judge is his representative, Shimon's judge is his representative. Now, let's look back for a moment at, let's say, the second Machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says, Ze posel dayano shel ze. I can dismiss your judge, you can dismiss mine. If your judge is your representative, should I have a right to dismiss him?
No.
No way. So before we were saying that Rabbi Meir expands the power of the Baal HaDinim because he holds its arbitration. Now we could say, in a sense, the opposite. The other way. Rabbi Meir holds that your judge is judging me just like he's judging you. I'm sorry. Yeah, therefore I have the power to dismiss him. According to the Chachamim,
you can't.
Your judge is representing you. My judge is you can't dismiss my judge. If you prove that he's a pasul, a karov, fine. But you're going to dismiss my judge? He's mine. He's my representative. You should have no say in who's representing
me. Why would it make a difference?
Rabbi Meir holds that all the Dayanim are judging both of them. Therefore, they all have a say in, I have veto power over yours, you have veto power over mine, that they're all judging all of us. According to the Chachamim, you're choosing a representative. I have no say in your representative. I'm choosing a representative. You have no say in mine. Go back to the first Machlokes. What did the Chachamim say? The Chachamim say, Rabbi Meir says the Baalei Dinim choose the third. The Chachamim say the Dayanim choose the third. Before we were saying, why do the Chachamim say the Dayanim choose the third? Because they hold this as a based in, they're mitigating the power of the Baalei Dinim. I think it's quite conceivable that everybody thinks that the consent of the Baalei Dinim is important here. What's the difference? The key question is, can the Dayanim be trusted to represent the Baalei Dinim? According to the Chachamim, each one has chosen a representative. And as his representative, I am now licensed to choose a third judge. According to Rabbi Meir, whoa, you chose a judge, but you're not representing me. You can't choose the third Dayan. I want to choose the third Dayan. You're not my representative. You're judging him just like you're judging me. According to the Chachamim, you've chosen a representative, so therefore you have no say in who I choose, and that person who I chose is an effective representative and a reliable representative to choose on my behalf a third judge. So the Machlokes in Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, depending on your perspective, can be construed in both ways. Either the Chachamim hold that this is a real based in, Rabbi Meir holds it's arbitration, therefore expand the power of the Baal HaDinim, or the opposite. Rabbi Meir holds that this is somewhat similar to a based in, the Chachamim are holding, I'm choosing representatives, and therefore the Machlokes follows the way it does. So we're going to further explore the issue. We're going to see a whole host of nafkaminas. We still have to revisit the Hava Amina of Rashi, that you require 9. Why would we ever say that? The Rush's question. And the questions that you guys were dealing with before, can you add more? There's an important Ramban ala Torah. There's an important position of the Maharival quoted in the Ramah about having more or less. And we'll explore a couple of other issues also that further highlight this chakir.
Can I just make a guess?
Yeah.
If you have 9, the 3 that are chosen the last by the 2, by the other 2 sets of 3, that's a truly neutral Bezdin of 3.
Maybe. I mean, but I think you could also go in the other direction. In other words, if this is a real based in Shel Shlosha, Dine Mamonis Beshlosha, why would you ever need more than three? Once we're in the realm of arbitration.
I understand.
Right.
Oh, if it's arbitration. Then, all right.
What's the status next week?
Good to see you.
Good to see you.